Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. We're here. We're here with Entitled Town. Our season goes on. I'm here with Iron Mike Irons. Al, you just heard from, doing a great announce. And I got to tell you, it has to be a great announce because this guy has been a real pain in the neck this week. He's walking around like, guys, I told you the Patriots were done. I told you they were toast. And while he was on vacation, he was able to find a place to watch in the Bahamas. And he saw the game and immediately texted me when it was over, like, I told you. And he was so happy. And I was like, dude, Al, you're a Patriots fan. Like, what are you so happy about? And he was like, I called it. I was right. I get the prize, whatever that might be, for knowing that the team was not going to go to the Super Bowl this year. So I guess that's some kind of slim satisfaction for Al, who's got a huge smile on his face. I'm looking at him, and he is just pumping his fist. Like, what is he so happy about? I don't quite get it. But here with Mike Irons, and Mike, we promised a show a little bit earlier in the week, and then your availability came. Suddenly there became a less availability than we thought there was going to be, so we had to scramble. And the only alternative was me doing a show alone with Al, and nobody wanted that because if people saw how great Al was, then this would just become the Al show. And what would we be doing? We'd be home during the playoffs, but we're not. We're here. We are sharing our opinions with the people. And so why don't we start off? And were you overjoyed that the Patriots lost in the first round of the playoffs? Or was this a situation where you hoped that you get to see some more football this year?
My brain has not been warped by the idiots at 98.5. My brain's been warped. Don't make any mistake. But my brain has not been polluted by 98.5 or 98.5, but dumber over at 93.7. Very disappointing. Very disappointing. There's no two ways around. I don't understand the segment of the fan base like Al. There's a growing disconnect between Al and I. He, as far as I stand, he's a glorified intern. Overrated.
Wow.
I honestly don't get it.
Is there tension in the Entitled Town offices?
Well, there's a three-headed monster. You got Dave, you got myself, you got Al. And we're going to have to get together in the off season and see if we can keep this relationship together. I mean, it's been, what's this, episode 23?
Well, I'm going to point out that you've not officially committed to next season.
I would like to point out you haven't offered me a contract yet. I'm a free agent. I've earned that right.
Well, okay. But then I'll have to point out that Al's sitting over there. He makes almost nothing. And, you know, that's
what he's on his rookie deal. He's on his rookie deal.
That's right.
And I'm looking for a shady Brookline land deal to help supplement my salary.
Well, I'll have to see.
That is a Greg Bedard classic.
I'll have to talk. That's the first time that Greg's name has been mentioned on this podcast.
Hyperlocal Harry himself.
Well, I think we might as well just jump into it. Fred Siegel from Freezing Cold Takes did refer to him as Eric Bedard, a former pitcher.
A crafty lefty. Orioles.
A crafty lefty for the Orioles, probably some other teams too. Did he pitch for Seattle?
They traded Adam Jones, the center fielder, for him.
There you go. And not Adam Jones, the talk show host.
No, he couldn't lift the Louisville Slugger.
And not Adam Pac-Man Jones.
No comment.
But you're not going to comment as to whether Adam Jones, the baseball player, is Adam Jones, the football player?
I'm not commenting on Pac-Man Jones and the assorted shenanigans. Let's just move on. Let's move on to almost the coach here.
Wow. That's an area that I feel like I want to get a subpoena and force you to testify on. But, okay. So, but I think I think I'll give a little bit of background. A good place for us to go now, we're past the game. Everyone's kind of digested that. And the talk seems to be, and I think rightfully so, the talk seems to be on, you know, the Patriots offseason. They have a lot of moves. What's the future going to be? Is Tom Brady going to come back? These are all, you know, there was a lot of dwelling last week and like, this could be Tom Brady's last game here and blah, 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 blah. And I feel like that deprived the game of some of the oxygen that it deserved. Now, here we are, all these questions, let's put them on the table and let's get into it. Amidst all of that came a report from the Boston Sports Journal. And we're not the first ones to talk about this report, and that's one of the reasons I'm happy to talk about it. Because it is a report from Greg Bedard about multiple sources saying that Bill Belichick was in play. And I don't know that I'm framing this word for word. You have to go up and look exactly what he said. And we'll play a little bit of him talking to Felger and Maz about it. But him saying that essentially Belichick might be interested in other coaching jobs. Okay. So that has been – he went on Felger and Maz and talked about it. But some other places have kind of criticized him. I know the Jerry Callahan Show – called it a made-up story, or at least Jerry did through his Twitter account, and people have kind of been occupying this, evaluating the story along these lines of like, is this a made-up story? And do you want to just play the clip?
Play the clip, and let's expound on it afterwards.
Let's play the clip of where we are. But I think just to set it up, the premise here is that it seems like that Bill. There are multiple sources saying that Bill might be available and that this has implications for the whole Patriots offseason as to whether or not to bring back Brady and how everyone's sort of power stands within the organization. So let's see here. And as I go to the clip, it's not quite where I thought it would be.
So for the record, he actually, to be fair, he reported this in the post-game show with Big Dim Murray and Mark Bertrand right after the game on Saturday night. So he doubled down on it on Tuesday.
Ah, here we go. I see. I mean, so I didn't cue this up. So I have two links here. Let's go with the – you do have the best audio, but I'm going to grab the I'm going to grab one off of Twitter that I know how to find because I don't have it.
And as you're listening to this, this is the audio from Felger and Maz. Keep in mind that his initial report was after the game on Saturday night. He says this bullshit on Felger. He's dancing for those two idiots, Felger and Maz, yesterday.
You know, Belichick, he's dancing for them. Might be in play. Not definitely. Not that he was out there.
Okay, that was the start of it. This is the level of incompetence in playing this clip is a new peak for the show. I'll say that. So we've already set it.
It is in the disclaimer. We are bad at this.
Okay, so he's citing. He says that there are two league sources. Here is the. Here's the quote. A little bit of which you already heard. Here we go.
Says that basically said, you know, Belichick might be in play. Not definitely. Not that he was out there, any of that stuff, but people thought that he was, you know, in play, that it was.
Okay, I'm going to jump in at this point in the conversation.
And he's referring specifically to the Giants job, I believe.
So not that he was out there, but that he's in play.
What does that even mean?
What does that mean? And so a little bit of context. Last week, I made a tweet about when Chad O'Shea was let go by the Dolphins. I put out a tweet that said that the Patriots, you know, people were looking at him and going, well, if McDaniels gets hired, then O'Shea would probably be a good replacement. The Patriots might want to keep an eye on him. And I said, I'm surprised no one's talking about them hiring him right now because he was their red zone coordinator and they could probably use a little help in that area. And somebody tagged they're like personal football brain trust. They quoted me and they tagged Greg and Zolak, Scott Zolak, for some input on that. And Greg responded and Greg said, hey, Chad O'Shea is under contract. They can't do that. And somebody said, actually,
hey, numbnuts, he was fired.
He was just fired. And I guess that news hadn't filtered down to Greg yet. It was all very recent.
Well, when you're serving two masters in Las Vegas and one in Medway, a flailing business owner doesn't have a lot of time to actually, you know, research for his job.
Well, I don't
spew the shit.
He's unfair.
It was within an hour.
Just spew the shit.
So he goes, so it makes this point about how O'Shea is under contract, so therefore what I have proposed is impossible. He was wrong about O'Shea being under contract, but it was a good point if O'Shea was still under contract. My tweet would have been really stupid. So then Greg follows up, yes, they should hire him. For those of you wondering, a lot of us have been speculating as to whether there is a rule that would have prevented the Patriots from hiring O'Shea. That may have been made in response to them hiring back McDaniels for the 2011 postseason. And then when they brought back Brian Daboll a year later. But anyway, getting way off track here, the point
is... I'm biting a hole through my lip talking about Bernard. Go ahead.
I'm going to have to lay out... I'm trying to lay out all these details. So Greg raised a great point. The guy was under contract. He then goes and gets two sources. Does he give those sources the same treatment that he gave my Chad O'Shea suggestion? Does he say, wait a minute, Bill Belichick is under contract? No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. He writes a story that Bill Belichick, according to leaked sources, might be in play. And then he will go on to say here that it is about gaining leverage. Okay, so let's hear the rest of Greg's statement.
It's possible. Now all the jobs are almost all taken. Cleveland's the only one open, so that's probably over. But I think this is part of an overreaching whole part of this dynamic that's going on between Belichick, Kraft, Brady. I think this is all of it is an orchestrated power play. So I think
first of all, he says overreaching when he means overarching. Which is possibly, I'm not going to get inside a person's head, but it could be a bit Freudian there, which because this concept is overreaching. The idea that Bill Belichick, according to a couple of quote league sources, is pursuing other jobs to gain leverage doesn't make much sense when those jobs are filled before you get on the air and start talking about it. Because the Giants' job went away quickly, and the Panthers' job went away even faster than that. So is Bill trying to get himself to Cleveland?
You can hear the weird. How? As he's spewing this bullshit about Bill being, quote-unquote, in play, you can hear him couch his words at the end. He goes, well, that's probably over. So he just spewed bullshit. He caught himself, and then he proceeds to spin into this nonsense.
How are you supposed to gain leverage? Okay, so – hypothetically speaking,
and whom is he looking for leverage with?
Oh, okay. I'll explain that. I think that makes sense to me, because what you have here is the situation. Okay, should the Patriots re-sign Brady? Is Robert Kraft going to come in, lay down the law, and say, "I want Tom Brady to be the quarterback next year"? And in that scenario, if you're Bill and you don't think that bringing Tom Brady back is the best is what's best for the team, that's where you're going to have an issue. And that's where you're going to say, well, hey, I'll go coach the Browns. They have a job open. That's the theory of how this works. Here's the problem with that. If Bill goes to Kraft and says, I'll go coach the Browns, you know, they have a job open, Kraft's going to go, great, I want your number one pick the next 2 years. Okay? Kraft, he's under contract, is the same issue Greg raised with me about the Chad O'Shea thing, except it's actually true here. Bill's under contract. If the Patriots are going to get if Bill's going to go in and say, I'm heading to the Browns, the Patriots are going to get compensated for that, and they're going to get compensated well, and it really just puts all the cards, like, your exit strategy puts leverage in the owner's hands. So I understand the theory of Bill wanting some leverage, but the idea that he's going to go coach the Browns to get that done doesn't add up. And I realized at one point it was like the Browns, Panthers, and Giants, but now it's just the Browns. That's the only job that's open right now.
Dave, he's flinging he's flinging shit. He's flinging feces everywhere because he's drowning in red ink. That's all this is.
So, okay. So let's get into the issue of whether this is, like, people say that this is made up. Okay. I'm willing to believe that there is some element of truth here. But the problem is with the way we source these things. So in journalism, there's three basic kinds of sourcing. Okay. There is on the record, which is when, you know, you go to a press conference and Bill Belichick says, Sony Michel is playing well this year. That's an on the record. You just quote him directly and blah, blah, blah. But then you get to what's called background. Okay. So background is where sources start to become anonymous. And that's where you feed into, you ask a source, you say, listen, like the most prominent example of this is Deep Throat. Okay. Within the Watergate story, where they went to a guy named William Felt who worked for the FBI. We later found out it was William Felt, but he was anonymous for decades. And William Felt said, I have pretty good information about what's going on in the White House, and led them to other elements of the story. So at first, Deep Throat was kind of on what they call deep background, but eventually he became, I don't know how they referred to him exactly, but they probably said, you know, a well-placed source in government or something like that. Background is the league source. When you use sources on background, okay, you don't call them by their name. You give them some kind of vague title so that they can maintain their anonymity, but you're also informing the audience, the reader, of what qualifications this person might have, why they might be a good person to inform the story. The problem with the term league source is it's too vague. We should eradicate this from all reporting. It's not good for the reporters. It's not good for the readers. All it does is help justify a story getting published, because a league source could genuinely mean, in some cases, even other reporters. All right. It could mean current players. It could mean former players. It could mean agents. Agents are a big problem with this term league source. Okay. When you read a story in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the Washington Post, or, you know, it's on Fox News, and they say, we have a source who is in the White House is saying something. That's a White House staffer, or they'll say a senior Pentagon official, or they'll say someone from the State Department. Now it narrows down the possibility, or it at least helps you understand the level of access to information that that person has. If you talk to two agents, okay, and I've had, now there's another level. So we did on the record and we did background. There's also what's called deep background. Deep background is where you don't source that person. You don't say who that person is. On deep background, you're just trying to learn some things so you can go ask the right questions. I believe that that's how it started with William Felt. Was like, they knew that William Felt was kind of in the know, and he was the one who was like, follow the money, pointing them in the right direction. That's where those things start, okay? I've had conversations with agents, especially when I started coming back to report on the NFL, where there were things, issues around the league that I wasn't familiar with and I wanted to familiarize myself with. And so you get an agent on the phone, and you just ask, I'd ask like a million questions and just have like a good long talk with the understanding, like, none of this is for publication. I'm not going to quote you on any of it. I'm not going to even not using your name. And so in one of those conversations, I could have created 30 headlines, okay, of unsubstantiated, a league source has said, right? Like just to make one up, like a league source has said that such and such a player loves gambling, loves to play craps, right? And it's kind of a problem. And so boom, like I could have run with that, said a league source said it, and not been accountable to my source or the audience and just boom, like, let's go get some clicks, right?
That's exactly what happens. That's all it is.
So what happens is, so that's the problem with that term lead source, is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a person who is close to Belichick. It's not Belichick. It doesn't, or Kraft, or it could just be an agent who is themselves. That agent could be speculating, or it's whoever.
Intentionally vague. It's disingenuous. Right. Disingenuous is a word that I probably overuse in this podcast. It's nebulous. It's disingenuous. Could be an agent. Could be a league source at 345 Park Avenue. Could be the guy that holds the markers on the sidelines.
Could be Belichick. It could be.
Right.
But if it were, I'm not sure I understand the contradictory phrasing, where it's like Bill is like in play, but he's not out there. What do those things mean?
If Bill Belichick was in play.
Nonsense.
Work with me here. If Bill Belichick was quote unquote in play, do you think that boom, 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 the Panthers would have filled their coaching vacancy? The Giants, which have been long been reputed, this myth has been spun by Boston sports media, that the Giants is our Bill's dream job. Do you think that the Panthers and the Giants would have pulled the trigger immediately if they thought Bill Belichick was in play? Of course not.
No, I don't think so. No. The Panthers might have. Maybe
so the premise is bullshit, and I'd throw the challenge flag on a league source thing. This is, as I mentioned earlier, all this is to get him exposure on Felger and Maz and try to get clicks to drive that failing business venture. It's a Hail Mary for clicks and for subscription dollars. And by the way, he's also writing for the Las Vegas Review Journal, covering the Raiders in the entire league. And he's covering the entire league in bullshit, if this thing is any indication.
I don't think he's their Raiders beat guy. But
yeah, he's probably an NFL writer covering the league in BS.
I want to set aside all of those things that you just said, and I just want to give a takeaway here for the audience. The takeaway is just be mindful of that term league sources. When you read that, it could mean so many things. And then when you have information that is self-contradictory, we have somebody saying that the person is in play, or the person is out there, but they're not out there, or they're in play. Like that's mealy-mouthed kind of contradictory, and it's just
intellectually dishonest.
Right. I don't know that it's dishonest. I mean, there's almost an honesty to it. It's almost an acknowledgement.
There's honesty. If it's idiocy, it's honest idiocy.
It's almost an acknowledgement that it's not good information. And, you know, I want to make clear, like, there's a reason that we don't talk much about Greg. We both sort of have had run-ins with him in the past. You've criticized him a lot on Twitter.
Listen, I'm blocked. I'm blocked with good reason.
And when we came into this, it was sort of like, I felt like, it would be, if we were the only ones, if we were just talking, we could, he probably says something that drives one of us nuts every week. And if we just got into that, we could be doing it all the time. And then the show, like, we don't want to make the show about him.
And I do that too much with Volan as it is.
And I feel like in my experience, he's the kind of person whose ego is fed by that. And I'm not looking to feed his ego.
See, I disagree with you, but this is a shared venture, and that's why we haven't mentioned him until today.
Right.
And
it was obvious. Like, today we had to get into it. Like, this report that there were supposedly two sources who said that Belichick was in play for jobs that didn't exist. And then he went on the radio and said that 2 days after he wrote it. Okay. So it goes back with me to when he started Boston Sports Journal, and I didn't really know much about Greg. I was like, he was putting all this stuff out there, like,
yeah, this story needs to be told. Absolutely.
We're not going to be like a hot takes kind of thing. We're going to play it straight. We're going to just do good journalism. And I thought, wow, like a subscriber service that does that? I was like, I want this thing to succeed. And I wrote Greg an email and I said, hey, I'll do anything to help your mission. I think this is fantastic. And I then followed up and proposed to him. So he kind of said like, oh, well, that'd be great. Maybe we could talk sometime. And I followed up and proposed recurring feature, where I would do essentially what we do on this podcast. We would look at stories and say, you know, is this information good or bad? What's missing from it? Because if you're not going to do hot takes, all right, if your media outlet has decided we're not going to do any hot takes, no disingenuous, fabricated nonsense, how do you sort of still have a meaningful place in the discussion of controversy? And I wanted to do a feature where you would do exactly what we just did with Greg's story. And it makes sense why he wasn't interested in this now. But look at a story, look at how is it sourced, what information is missing, and how can what can readers take away from it? How could it be more balanced? What, try to answer some of the questions that might not have been answered by other reports and things of that nature. And I just thought it would be a good way, like to do some informative sports journalism for the audience. And I proposed to do this for free while I was still covering the Patriots for another publication. And I just had a child. Like my child was like 4 months old or something. Okay, like 3 or 4 months old. That's how much it meant to me that what he was proposing at the time. Now Greg didn't get back to me. He was a very busy guy. Just started a business. Okay, understood. Greg then gets on my radar with some stories and some of the things he says. I didn't know at this point that he does a show. He goes on Felger Maz every Tuesday and plays along with their hot takes. Like, I didn't realize that. You start focusing. He annoys you during the summer because you pointed out something about one of the stories and he got really snippy with you and kind of was rude to you. And that, I think, really amped up your sort of critiques of him. And when you started posting things that he would say on Felger and Maz, I was like, oh my God, like, this is terrible. And then one day he goes on there and he starts mimicking, in a mocking way, Stephon Gilmore's speech, you know, like the way he talks. Like, he talks very quiet, Stephon Gilmore.
He mumbles.
I mean, look, he kind of mumbles, but if you're standing close to him, you can absolutely understand what the guy's saying. But so Greg just mocks the guy's speech. And I'm like, you're an adult. And this, and Stephon Gilmore is standing in the locker room, taking blame for a month of bad defense. And it was 2017. And it's like, you know, that to me was beyond unprofessional. It was on a human level, very distasteful. And so I criticized him for that. Somebody then came to me and was like, hey, I'm hearing about you. Like, I'm getting, somebody who had connected me to Greg was like, hey, I'm catching heat now because you criticized Greg. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't have to answer for me. I'm an individual person. He can come talk to me if he wants to. But later on,
it's like high school, for Christ's sakes, the worst aspects of high school.
I know. This is like in a weirdly competitive, in what should be a cooperative environment, by the way. I'll get into that another time. I think that team beat reporting should be way more cooperative than it is. But in a highly competitive environment, with a lot of egos, a lot of nonsense comes out. And so this is like compared to a lot of what's going on in the private sector, as far as business goes, normal business rules don't apply to this industry. It is normal. The way people deal with each other is completely different. It is just a whole other, it's a with us or against us type attitude. So anyway, so with Greg, after another criticism at some point last season, he said that the only reason I don't like him is because of he didn't give me a job, and that he rejected my idea for I think he called it something like Homer Patriots column or something, anti-media Homer Patriots column or something like that. I then posted the email that I wrote to him, which made very clear that it wasn't supposed to be anti-media. It was just dissect what's going on in the media. And I put the email out there at one point. You can read the whole thing. I don't have any problem with anything I said. I think the email speaks for itself and showing that the way he characterized it is completely.
Let's put that on the Entitled Town account when we're done.
Oh, that sounds like work. Okay, I assign that to you. That's, but But
good job delegating, Brown.
There you go. Maybe Al could do it. But okay. So that's where we were with that. And I've decided pretty much since then that I just don't want anything to do with Greg. Like it's because that was, and I was expecting that. I was expecting him to come out and say, well, you're just mad because, oh, he was talking about me behind my back during Super Bowl 52 and telling everybody that telling all the beat that he rejected me for a job, telling half the story, of course. So by the way, my own personal interactions with him, if you look at the things he said about me and compare that to the record of evidence of what I said to him, it doesn't add up. Now, then there was the story with Daron Harmon. Do you know about this?
No, go on.
So, let's see. So, Daron Harmon, during the summer, said that Greg had mischaracterized something he said in the story. And so, let's see. All right, so here's the headline. Landon Roberts and Daron Harmon know increased competition puts their spots in jeopardy. Both made the team, by the way.
He's got a hair across his ass about a Landon Roberts for some reason.
Well, he did. I'll give him credit. He was among the people who said that the Patriots should look to Roberts as a fullback. But he also said that
he also said he should be cut in the preseason.
Cut. Right.
In the previous preseason.
Let's see. So
I don't think he saw it at all.
I can't find.
Well, let me ask you a question, Dave.
Harmon's response, but Harmon essentially said that some of what he said in that story was mischaracterized.
Yeah, color me shocked. Can I ask you a question, Dave?
Yes.
All right. So Bedard accuses you of being bitter and having a hair across your ass for him because he turned you down for a job. Well, let me expand on that. League sources, and this is the goddamn truth. I was told that Bedard applied for a job in the Patriots scouting department. I'm sure the laughter was pretty raucous when he applied for a job as a scout.
Did a league source tell you that?
A league source, it did indeed tell me that. And
I don't know. I don't know if that's true.
Well, again, my league source tells me this. It's actually two league sources. I think that's the in vogue phrase that almost the coach uses, two league sources. So he may have been projecting onto you the anger he felt towards the Patriots organization when they turned him down for a job. I'm just asking the question.
I mean, big if true.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I'm not, again, I'm just trying to evaluate the parts of the story that we can look at what the facts are. And I know that my personal experience with him, he has embellished and mischaracterized things that I said to him.
So draw your own conclusions, but this is a proverbial pattern of behavior. It goes The hubris that he demonstrates in his writing, his overinflated sense of self-worth. Am I biased? Yeah, I hate the guy. The genesis of my issue with him is when he, a couple of weeks or a week before he started the Boston Sports Journal website, he had a Twitter Q&A. And several years ago, he was dancing for Felger and Maz. It actually was probably the year before or 6 months before he started his failing business venture. He went on Felger and Maz and called Patriot fans the worst in the league. Yeah, okay, it's whatever. It stuck in my craw a little bit. I am a fan. So I went on to Twitter in his Q&A and I asked him, I simply asked him, I said, you know, this is something, as you pointed out, this is something that I would like to support if you're going to do what you say and say what you do. But, you know, can you explain this? Why did you call Patriots fans the worst in the league? You're asking for people to give their money to you for your insight. So why do you feel that way? Do you have contempt for your potential audience? And he responded that, as always, context matters. And I asked him, in what context did he mean that? and he dismissively waved it off, and other people have gone on again and again to ask him the question, and he's gone on a blocking spree. That's fine. The whole Loico thing, he hired Mike Loico, and it came out later. Cancel culture, however you feel about that. Mike Loico came out, or he tweeted some racist and homophobic slurs at, I believe it was at P.K. Subban of the Montreal Canadiens.
And in fairness, he says that his account had been hacked 7 years before he was a known person. So,
right.
That was his Loico's side of the story prior to him deleting his Twitter account.
So Bedard said he was going to conduct an investigation after the 2018 World Series because he was jet-setting across the globe following the Red Sox, the Spygate Sox 2018 World Series championship. He's never come forward with any sort of explanation despite promising that he would. The accountability that he looks for in athletes, in the teams he covers, he doesn't demonstrate himself. He is the proverbial worst. I loathe the guy. That anyone who follows me on my inane ramblings on Twitter realizes that. The evidence is mounting with this guy is full of shit. He's completely full of shit. He's not trustworthy. If you give him a dime of your money, you know, you deserve what you get. I mean, he claims, as you mentioned, to be this paragon of journalistic virtue and above it all, and he goes and dances for those two fucking morons every week, flinging shit everywhere. It's an affront to anyone who wants honest coverage.
They make fun of his weight every time he's on, which...
have some fucking pride, man. Jesus.
Like, I'm about... I mean, Greg and I are both... neither of us is the ideal body weight, I'll put it that way. And I would say that if I were on that show every week and they treated me that way, I would be done going on that show every week. You know, not because I'm a sensitive person, but because at some point when you're out there in front of an audience, you have to maintain some dignity. Like on this show, we do talk about how we're not skilled broadcasters. Like that's not what we do. We talk about that. We acknowledge that there are flaws with us. But, you know, if I sat here every week and said that you are a big dummy and, you know, and like, and just harped on the same joke. I made up some comedy fact about you and then hit you and just called you stupid every week. And every joke came back to your IQ or something like that. Like, you wouldn't put up with that. That would be
I'm not above driving a joke into the ground, but it's painfully unfunny and it's the cringeworthy at the same time.
And if I did call you stupid, it would be wrong. You know what I mean? When you hit somebody on a characteristic that is true and then force them to choose between their dignity and continuing to do the show, like that's wrong. And you should choose your dignity every time, in my opinion. He does not.
Judge him by the company he keeps.
Well, yeah. I mean, but so here's the thing with Harmon. So the headline was Landon Roberts and Daron Harmon, no increased competition puts their spots in jeopardy. And Harmon wrote, come on, Greg, I never said that at all. Then three.
I love the at all as well.
At all. Three laughing emojis. Stop with the fake news, my man. And then Bedard responded, yeah, that might be fair. Jeopardy might have been too strong. And then he puts, quote, I guess he rewrites the headline now because this.
Beep, beep, beep.
Backs it up. Alandon Roberts and Daron Harmon know competition for spots has only increased this year. Oh, okay. And then Harmon responds to that.
It's so embarrassing.
This is amazing. He writes, I mean, that's still not what we talked about, but I guess you're trying to write a good story, LOL. So... And then WW2 Felger actually responded to that by quoting, he dropped in a tweet from Greg from 2013, asked one personnel exec about Harmon, LOL, surprised many here. That was from draft day in 2013 when Harmon was drafted. So in other words, just to point out that Greg has sort of been down on him since the start.
He was wrong about the player. from Jump Street.
But personnel exec, by the way, that's a pretty specific way to cite a background source, a personnel executive. Doesn't say which team the person was personnel. Doesn't say if they're current or former. But that's much more specific than league source. Isn't that interesting?
Big if true.
That when he has something more specific, he says it. Okay. So, I mean, now when this stuff with Harmon went down, no one wrote about it. No one pointed out that Daron Harmon was challenging that his version of the story was different than the one that appeared in the publication. And I like have been blinders to Greg for the last year because I just don't want to get into some kind of thing where it's perceived as personal and I'm, you know, grinding an axe. Like, I'm just like, fine, I don't have to grind this axe, you know? But now we're at a point where it's throwing out this story. We're going to evaluate whether or not it's true. And I'm happy to sit here and explain to you, to the audience, why this guy has, why we've never talked about him and why these things bother us. And, you know, I've just throughout seen absolutely no commitment to the truth, no commitment to, one of the things he says on his website is, if we wander from this mission of no contrived takes, or if we have bad information, call us on it. And then when people call him on it, he devolves into kind of a thin-skinned response instead of addressing the issue head-on, instead of giving some kind of insight as to how things happened. He gets defensive. He denies that it's happening. One of the things that came up in the 2017 season was when it was with Brady and Kraft. He made a statement about Kraft, a tweet about Kraft. It was because the documentary came out. So it was Tom versus Time, and he's watching it, and something along the lines of, Tom walking out to his some other part of his property, you know, I wonder how much this thing that Kraft gave him was worth. Or he basically insinuated that Kraft had
a Brookline land deal, quote unquote.
Right, the Brookline land deal, and basically insinuating that Kraft gave it to him. As somebody who makes I make a lot of sarcastic statements on Twitter that are meant to be facetious. When you do that, you have to tip off the audience to the people reading the tweets that this is too absurd to be true. But that's a rumor that's floated around for a while. So
I have the exact quote here, Dave. I just pulled it up.
Good.
And this is from one of Bedard's daily briefings on his website. Quote, Tom Brady got an extension, which gives them more cap room for this season. This is last season, I believe. But next year, his cap hit maybe $37 million. Something doesn't add up. Tom Brady has a lengthy walk through his finish barn. This is a different bullet point.
That's the one.
Same.
That's what I'm referring to.
How much land did Robert Kraft, this is in quotation, sell him?
Yes.
End quotes, in Brookline.
Kraft didn't sell him any land. He didn't buy that land from Kraft. He bought it from whatever that college is over there. There's a college in Brookline, like right in the middle of this super wealthy neighborhood, right next to Brookline Country Club. It's where the house that Brady's selling is there. Brady bought that land from the college, and I believe it was public because the college board of trustees had to approve it and stuff like that. And so Kraft didn't own that land. It would be on the record if Kraft owned the land.
Exactly, and I want to expand on that point. He went back and edited the daily briefing on that day, saying it was a joke like the rest of this column. I'm going to go to another tweet that I put up on December 20th, 2017.
When I called him on it, it was like, oh, I was only joking.
He's incapable of humor, I would argue, but
people read that in that context and they're like, oh, wait a minute. What? Like, it's almost as if it's an established fact already. He's not reporting it as something new.
So correct. So hold on a second here. If that's a joke, Dave, this is a December 20th, 17. He's the same premise, a different angle. And we've discussed this angle vis-a-vis another writer before that Mittens losing dullard Ben Volen is used. Good company there, almost the coach. This is Bedard on 98.5. On Kraft, the one thing you have to take into account, remember TV 12 is a Patriot Place tenant, and there may be some sort of financial arrangement there, end quote. That's two instances.
Right. Like, and it's, that's not a joke, is it?
No, it was not a joke.
And so, and then he also, and I'm just unloading. I mean, this is like years of, see, here's the problem. Here's the problem. We don't call people out on these things when they happen. All of these things, like if you play for a football team and you make a mistake, like that N'Keal Harry play we've talked about where he is running the under route and the pass was intercepted because Harry did not position his body in front of the defender. As soon as you do that in football, the coaches pull you aside and they say, that's not how it's done. Because if you keep doing that, we're going to keep losing the football and we're not going to score points. And those things are either corrected out or they stop running under routes with N'Keal Harry. Okay. Go show us you can do it properly or we're not going to let you do it. In this business, for reasons I still do not understand, no one pulls anyone aside and says, hey, you know what? It's really not cool to go on the radio and talk about Stephon Gilmore in that way. It's really not okay to make a joke like that because if you don't execute that joke properly, then you're giving people the impression that it's true. If, what's it, the Harmon thing. If the guy is saying that you've mischaracterized the story, you've got a problem. No one, now he owns his publication. So that is a tricky thing because there's no editor to be accountable to. He used to work for the Boston Globe and Sports Illustrated, and maybe there was a little bit more of a check on, maybe that's why in 2013, I think he was with the Globe at the time, maybe that's why he specified personnel exec. Maybe that was a Globe standard. I don't know. But when you have some accountability, you're a little more accountable. We in this industry let everything go. Everything is okay. So how do people improve? How do you, I'm not saying that no one's allowed to make a mistake, but how does the industry get better at this when there's sort of an unspoken rule against criticizing each other and talking through, hey, don't run the route that way. Don't publish that information without a better source.
The wagons are constantly circled. I rail about this all the time. The wagons are perpetually in motion, in a circular motion around each other. Jerry Callahan at Alex Reamer on his podcast on Monday for his debut. He's talking about having John Tomasi on. Callahan rails constantly about the double standard in the liberal media, and he's guilty of it himself. The Boston sports media, tattoo this in my gravestone, is an incestuous cesspool. I don't know. I honestly don't know how you can walk into that press box. I assume you take a shower immediately when you get home.
Well, I don't want to get into my grooming habits, but, I want to say this is tough for me. This is tough for me because, you know, I work for a newspaper that that cover the Patriots for, and I don't want to create a situation where they are looked at unfavorably because I say these things. But the less that we say these things, the more they happen. And
we become complicit.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to feel complicit in protecting a curious set of practices that are going on in this industry. And then you look, and another reason, I mean, part of this is, look, Greg is working for a small publication. It's one of the reasons why I've just kind of ignored him for a long time. But he goes on the most popular radio show in this market every Tuesday and says whatever he wants. And then Seth Wickersham during the 2017 playoffs put out that big article about all of the problems in Foxborough. And he cites Boston Sports Journal as a source in his story. And so then, like, okay, was that information any good that Seth Wickersham was citing?
And those two guys are giving each other reach-arounds, promoting each other's bullshit at the time. And a lot of Wickersham stuff has been proven.
several false. Parts of that story. Right. Correct. Well, Robert Kraft came out. So there was a thing in there that Kraft and Belichick had like a half day meeting, which was proven to be incorrect. Or no, I shouldn't say it was proven. I shouldn't say that. But Bob Kraft came out and said it didn't happen. Now, you see a lot of times where people will respond to a story and give an impression of their, they'll say, well, no, I don't think that's all true and blah, blah, blah. It's rare for someone to come out and say specifically that one fact was not true. And he was pretty worked up about it. He told Peter King directly and on the record that meeting never happened. So when you have a competing thing between an anonymous source and you have somebody who, the tricky thing for Bob Kraft, if he puts himself on the record saying that meeting didn't happen and there was, a couple of office workers sitting outside of that meeting for half a day while Belichick and Kraft were in there, one of them could come out and say, no, it definitely happened. And you put yourself on the line there. I tend to find in that situation, the person who has made themselves accountable to be a little more credible. Now, then there was also a fact in that story, the Wickersham story, about Jimmy Garoppolo being locked out of TB12, which is sort of funny to think that might be true. But then Jimmy's people said it wasn't true. And so several facts. And then I was reviewing that story today.
Sense a pattern?
Well, I was reviewing the story today, and he makes this point, Wickersham does, in that story. He says that in 2016, the Patriots did a bit of a restructure on Brady's contract. So Brady's two-year contract with a $28 million signing bonus was designed to set up 2018 as a key year, when the team could, in theory, look at a 41-year-old Brady and his $22 million cap hit and decide if it made sense to transition to Garoppolo. In theory, that is impossible, because Garoppolo was only under contract through 2017.
A minor
detail. This article came out half a season after Garoppolo had been traded. He was traded because he was in the final year of his deal, and for the Patriots to keep him beyond 2017, they would have had to either extend him, which Garoppolo would have had to agree to, or pay him an exorbitant sum in the franchise tag, probably more than Brady was making, to be the backup. They would have to franchise a backup. So really, they had to make the decision on whether to transition to Garoppolo prior to 2017. So think about that. He's saying that the plan, in theory, was to decide this in 2018, a year after Garoppolo was, the year when Garoppolo had left for another team. That doesn't make any sense, and I didn't pick up on it when I read it 2 years ago. But what the hell is he talking about?
They just write it off, Dave.
What does that mean? Do you know what that means, that they write it off?
But they do, and they're the ones writing it off.
I mean, think about that. He wrote in this story that this is pure, that the purpose of Brady's two-year contract in 2016 was to set up 2018 as a year to review the two quarterbacks. They can't evaluate the two quarterbacks in 2018. One of them is going to be gone.
And you want to be my hot take salesman.
It's just like, so that one, that particular segment of the Wickersham story arrived wrong. It was wrong on delivery. And then the Kraft thing came out, and then the Jimmy G thing came out, was contradicted.
The one that sticks in my craw is in the hit piece he did on Belichick and Brady in the Discord in Foxborough. He cited Brady being upset on not receiving the Patriot Player of the Week award, which didn't exist and doesn't exist.
I thought it does exist. No, it's Patriot of the Week. It's not Player of the Week. You're right. There's no Player of the Week award, but there is Patriot of the Week, which could go to, if there's a blizzard and they clear all the snow, like whoever's in charge of the crew that clears it, they could give that person Patriot of the Week. They could give Patriot of the Week to the video crew if they don't create a cheating scandal.
Oh, the video crew is not getting Patriot Player of the Week, Dave.
No. But yeah, so I don't know. Like, all of this makes me feel bad. Like,
That makes one of us.
Well, it makes you've been wanting this for a long time, where we kind of picked apart all these things. And it just, it was a can of worms. We opened it. It's a can of worms. I will just say that there are a handful of people in life that I have had nothing but negative interactions with. And this is one of them. And every time I read his work, I find some kind of thing where I'm like, this, there's a lot, like the time when, and this is, I think, what precipitated his saying that I was upset that he didn't give me a job, the job where I offered to work for him for free. He said that I was upset because I think it was in response to the time when after a game, Brady had a quick press conference last season. And he said, well, I guess, you know, Brady's kind of upset because he was only up there for like a minute. And, you know, I guess, I don't know. He was in a hurry. He sure was in a hurry to get out of here.
Oh, that's right.
He did not go into the Patriots locker room. I know this because I did go into the Patriots locker room that night. And you know what I saw in there was Tom Brady having a heck of a time with his young daughter, okay? Who they were just his 5-year-old, 6-year-old daughter at the time. And they were just playing around and like having fun with other players and stuff.
Was she being an annoying little pissant?
Absolutely not.
I didn't think so.
But the point is, Tom wasn't in a mood. He wasn't upset. He just didn't want to stand there and talk to the media all night because who does, right? Like, there's no winning for him in that conversation. So what if your option is to go play with your children or stand there and talk to people like me and Greg? That's no contest, okay? You go play with your children and you go have a good time. He was down in the visitor's locker room. And then he goes on a post-game show for the Sports Hub and talks about Tom being in a mood and blah, 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 missing out on smiling Tom down the hall.
And this is the stuff that becomes empirical fact
in right.
the minds of the hot takers. And this is much more, you know, I rip off on poor Ryan Hannibal. He's so grammatically challenged. He's terrible with the typos. He doesn't proofread his stuff before he posts it. That's, you know, it's stuff to laugh at.
And he's got a guy who circles every mistake he makes.
Yeah, the W at WEI underscore typos. And I laugh every time I see it. And it's, I'll click on his stuff occasionally. It's glaring.
And by the way, that guy is like a crowdsourced editor for WEI because they always fix the mistakes after he does
it. Yeah, they do without attribution, by the way.
He's doing so much free work for them.
Yeah, it's kind
of
like, crazy.
Part of you is like, hey, hire an editor. This guy embarrasses you every day. But then the other part of you is like, you know what? Yeah, let him edit it. Then just fix it when he's done.
Well, when you have no pride in your product, it's kind of easy to do that. So that's it's an easy laugh. It's the kind of the stuff you chuckle when you read it. And what Bedard's doing.
I feel bad on some level that happens to Ryan because that would be excruciating if somebody and good for Ryan. I mean, in a way, like he keeps his head down and just keeps at it.
But he doesn't get better at it. He doesn't proofread his stuff. Ryan, pro tip, Ryan, the squiggly red line under a word, you may want to double check it.
I don't want to get too far off the beaten path here, but right.
My larger point
there
is that
there could be other factors at play here. You don't know how much time he has to work with and how much support. It sounds like not much support from editors. So
I've argued before that it's not his fault that he's being put into a position where he's probably not best suited. He's being set up to fail, that sort of thing.
If something like that continues, I don't know that I blame any one person except for the person in charge.
No, correct. Absolutely. Like, you don't.
Why haven't you sorted that out?
If you have a quarterback who keeps throwing interceptions and keeps throwing interceptions and the coach leaves them in there, ultimately it's going to fall on the coach. Except right. for it comes back to
in
the
this
fact
business,
that
it's like in this business, it is so
no accountability.
People gave me such a hard time for calling Greg out on a couple things back in 2017. Like I would get DMs like, you know, hey, there are people who have jobs there. And it's like, first of all, at the time I had like 1,400 Twitter followers and no one knew what it was.
It doesn't invalidate your point. If you have 3 followers, it doesn't invalidate your point.
But no. But my point is that nobody knew who I was. I couldn't hurt his business. And they were, and the first thing they went to was, oh, people have jobs. And this idea that like protecting the job is more
important. About the children?
Well, but the idea that protecting the job is more important than protecting the industry is self-defeating, because that's why jobs are disappearing. We're not putting the work into growing and improving globally what we do, and we're, it's hurting credibility, and that's what drives readers away. It's not because, like, I can only help. It doesn't feel like help, and it feels like personal, and I hate it. And it just, you need to talk about, like, there are times, yes, when walking into the press box is difficult because I know that I've said things that aren't popular. But putting these ideas out there at least gets someone talking about them, and maybe something can happen. But
you know what Hannibal does? What Hannibal does at the end of the day is benign. What Bedard and his ilk are doing is actively harmful and toxic, and they're, it's the journalistic equivalent of noxious fumes.
Well, it's that, what did I used to say about Steve Jobs? It was like a reality distortion field.
Good point, man.
That people would go to him and say, Steve, we can't do this. Like, this is impossible.
Just remember, Dave, it's not a lie if Greg believes it.
Well, he'd come back, Steve Jobs, be like, it's not impossible. And then they'd eventually figure it out. But that idea, reality distortion field, definitely, like, Greg doesn't seem, in my, just based on my own personal interactions, to have much regard for what's actually happening. And a lot of journalism today comes down to, what can I say? Like, within the framework of the facts that are here and the words that my sources used, what's the most that I can get? What's the broadest conclusion, or really the narrowest conclusion I can get away with saying, where I'm going to make up something, like Tom Brady's angry. I can say that, right? Because he just didn't look happy in front of the media. So now I'm going to say Tom Brady's angry, even though he's having a great time.
Almost the body language coach.
Like 200 yards from me down the hall, but I can say, hey, he's having a, he looks like he's in a rough mood. I hate it, and I don't derive joy from this. I find that every time I say these things, I only attract more scorn and misery.
I derive joy from this.
I know you do. But these things, you know, we got to talk about them, and you know,
we're just asking the question, caller.
Do you want to, let's look at this other thing that was also happened to be on Felger and Mads this week.
We're doing our listeners a disservice, but in this case, I think it has to be done in light of the events of the past week or so.
So let me see if I can, it looks like I lost it while I was trying to find some of these other things. But so yesterday they talked about, should the Patriots keep Brady? And both Felger and Maz were against that. And that's not the problem I have. I actually think that you can make that there's a fair discussion to be had here, because
it's the ultimate current barroom argument.
Yeah, I mean, look, if the Patriots sit down and look at what's in front of them, they have to decide, is, you know, Tom Brady plus about $24 million in cap space to spend better for us than Jarrett Stidham plus about $45 to $50 million in cap space to spend? Like, what puts the better team on the field? And I think that's a realistic argument that needs to be had. And of course, I had this up before the show started, and now I can't find it. Maybe they talked about it on Monday, but this is, you know, this is our highly professional operation here. And
my observation, Dave is sharing his screen with me. My observation is, I can't believe that you're not blocked by Bedard.
I mean, I hope I'm at least muted, right? Like,
he probably has the world muted at this point.
Our account was the Twitter account for this show has been blocked by John Tomasi
without ever having tweeted at him.
Right.
Could be an algorithm. It was pointed out to me yesterday by somebody in response to me, but I did. I went from my main Twitter account over to the Entitled Town account to read some inanity that he put on. By the way, how tone deaf is it that NBC Sports Boston had John Tomasi on to talk about Sox Spygate? I mean, you can't make that stuff up.
Well, again, I mean, it's just the whole, in the eyes of the actual media, that history has all been whitewashed. It's like, it's just perfectly okay that John Tomasi had one of the biggest false reports in the history of sports media. Like, it's never talked about when he got his job, when he moved from EEI to
NBC. Well, from the Herald to EEI, with a promotion going from the Herald to EEI, mind you.
I believe it was discussed then, but in his most recent job change, when it was reported that he was moving, no one brought it up. So that's a legacy where every year Marshall Faulk comes out and talks about how the Patriots filmed a walkthrough, but that legacy sticks to Bill Belichick and the Patriots, not to the person who got the story wrong. And that's fascinating.
The argument that
he's out there talking about the Red Sox. Go ahead.
The argument that you made earlier is actually really valid on this. It's like, John Tomasi needs a job. He shouldn't be in media, but the guy deserves an opportunity to make a living. Same thing with Alex Reamer. But think about the children, you know, the whole thing with the Boston sports media and the people need jobs. Yeah, people need jobs. You going to invest your money with Bernie Madoff? I'm not going to trust anything John Tomasi has to say.
This is an industry. The sharing information is a job that, you know, gathering and sharing information is a job where you must have the public trust. And being cavalier with the public trust should be a job disqualification for that role. That if you're going to be out there sharing and gathering information, the public should be able to trust you. And you're cavalier with that trust, you're not suited for the position.
And we're pointing out today numerous instances of people being cavalier with the trust and just blatant disregard for basic tenets of journalism and just honestly some decency.
Integrity has to matter. And every time I've tried to, and you know what, prior to doing this show, I would say my attempts to, I just thought everyone assumed that integrity mattered. And I got outraged and acted inappropriately to some degree. Did not express my message well when I first encountered that people were that word lapses in integrity. And so maybe to some degree it's on me that I've had bad experiences when I bring this up. But it has never gone well for me when I've suggested that we need to have more integrity. We need to be mindful of these things. I suspect that I could do what I do, play it a little nicer, and smile a little bit more, shake a few more hands, and that I would probably be a more prominent figure in Boston media.
If you wanted to play grab ass.
I would have to shed some integrity or my, you know, understanding of what my integrity is to achieve that. And I don't think that that's not something I'm comfortable with. So I'm going to go to this. So like I've said, there is a valid conversation to be had about whether they should bring back Brady. Here's the conversation. Here are the terms they discussed it on yesterday. I'm going to drop you in here kind of in the middle with Felger talking about why he doesn't think that they can continue the way things have been going.
Doing this, it's a little dysfunctional, especially since there's probably going to be a new offensive coordinator in here. There's going to be a new offensive coordinator or a promoted offensive coordinator. Last year they lost a receivers coach and a quarterback coach. This year they're going to lose the offensive coordinator who is still a quarterback's coach. They're going to have a new OC, a promoted guy. They have to bring in all these new coaches, and the quarterback's not going to show up until July? I mean, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do it the way it's been. The way it's been with the coaches established, it's been wrong for Brady to miss the offseason. Now you're going to have all these new young receivers. They have to reset the offensive skill positions, new tight ends, you know, again, probably some new receivers in the mix, a whole bunch of new coaches, and he's going to blow off the offseason? You can't. No. You just can't do that.
Okay. So first of all, Tom Brady does not blow off the offseason. He misses a handful of workouts that under the collective bargaining agreement, or he has for the last 2 years missed a handful of workouts that under the collective bargaining agreement, he is not required to attend. They are voluntary in participation. So I found that for that to be the number one reason not to bring him back, I found that a little, that sounded to me like a little bit that didn't add up. Okay. Because what they do in those workouts is not really like teaching the entire offense. It's not a rigorous study. And we talk about the possibility of losing McDaniels. We talk about the possibility of having to bring in all these new coaches and so forth. That difference is not made up in a handful of voluntary workouts in April and May.
Okay? The CBA is very limited. It limits what they can do in the offseason.
But that's what it sounds like to me. So you know what I did? I reached out to a league source. And I said, hey, you know, this the off-season program, is it that big of a deal? I don't want to minimize it if I shouldn't be minimizing it. And my source said, yes, it is a big deal for fitness sake. If we're talking about a player who misses time with an early soft tissue injury or a young player who doesn't know WTF, I assume that means what the F, he's doing mental mistakes constantly. No, for just about everyone and everything else, particularly on field stuff. Assuming this is in response to Brady, which I hadn't mentioned. Assuming this is in response to Brady, and it's just a dumb, don't know what they're talking about angle. That's how that was described to me by my league source. I'll go further and clarify that my league source is somebody who has participated in these off-season training activities and is infinitely more qualified to discuss that aspect of this equation than are the two people who host that show from 2 to 6 every day.
I would go even further than that and say any time that Felger is building a scenario to come to a conclusion, the scenario is going to be it's going to be false. It's going to be a false premise, and that's exactly the case here. He doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's being intentionally obtuse.
They also are 1-for-2 in Super Bowls since Brady started missing these workouts, so you know I'm not sure I buy the idea that it's screwing everything up. I think people – you know, okay, so maybe he would have been a little more familiar with N'Keal Harry, who then went on to – miss half the season and most of training camp, and then or a good portion of training camp, and then you know Sanu wasn't here back then. Tom Brady missing a few workouts in April is not the reason that Julian Edelman's dropping the football.
And you could go the other way, Dave. You could also say that Brady not being there was actually helpful for Stidham.
Yeah, well, you had Stidham and you had Hoyer out there, and you know during those workouts are even less. I mean, they don't even do, I think in the voluntary stuff, they don't even do like offense versus defense. You're just running routes. Like it's not like the precision stuff, like they just run like a basic set of plays. It's not game planned type. It's not, if you go watch one of these practices, they're not interesting for a reason. It's just about the stuff that, you know, my league source talked about, getting back in shape if you've been hurt, or if you're a rookie, working on those, on running those routes with the coaches, and how do we fix this thing that you're not doing correctly? You don't necessarily need Tom Brady for that. But by the way, Brady has made himself available to these people. Just come home, come to my home, and work from the backyard. And you know
and
what?
They have done that.
There are a lot of successful organizations whose senior executives work from home. And if this were a software company, Tom Brady would be a senior executive in it. It adds up for me. I don't know. But okay. So normally on this show, we're criticized for disagreeing with the conclusion, like as if to say we're picking on this media because we don't like what they're saying. We don't like that they think that they shouldn't bring Brady back. You know what? I think you and I both agree that there's a good argument for the team to sit down and say, we think we can do that what's best for the team might be spending our money in a different way. We can totally believe that argument. Looking at the salary cap and crunching the numbers, I honestly don't know. I'm not qualified enough to review film to sit there and say that that's the best way to spend like $25 million is on Tom Brady next year. I don't know. But, and I'm willing to entertain that argument, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend that this OTA controversy, and it's not even OTAs that he's missing because it's technical terms for all this stuff, but to pretend that this controversy is real and is the problem, I can't entertain that idea. So, you know, at some point, I could be persuaded to agree with the conclusion that they have, but their reasoning is complete nonsense. It doesn't add up. It's not a real controversy.
It's borrowing worry at this point if you're a Patriots fan. Really all it is. There is a good argument. I honestly have trouble processing him not being with the team next year. As you and I have pointed out on Twitter, they take a pretty substantial hit. I believe it's $13.5 million if they don't bring him back. So there's a financial motivation cap-wise to bring him back there in terms of team building.
And I think
there is an argument to be made to work with Stidham or someone who's lower priced, but I don't see it.
Well, I think we can walk through the other part of this equation that we don't know is we don't know how good Stidham is. You know, the last time we saw Stidham, he was kneeling down somewhere or he was throwing a pick six. You know, we have no idea if he's improved, how much he's improved, what he's doing now. Like he could be the greatest thing ever and we don't know it. He could be the worst thing ever and we don't know it. I'm just saying that to evaluate these things, you have to think how Belichick thinks, and he's going to be less sentimental about these things than you and I are, certainly than you are. And I think it would be super weird if Tom Brady wasn't the quarterback of the Patriots, but that's just because that's all I've known for the last 20 years. So, but you know what? I mean, I saw Joe Montana play for the Chiefs. These things happen. So anyway, I understand the possibility, and I think on a future episode we should walk through it. I also think we've done a really long show here, and I don't know. I just feel horrible. Like I get these bad feelings when I put all the stuff out there, but it has to be said. And but I think we should wrap it up. I think we're getting close to the end here. Do you have any email that you want to
walk? Yeah, I have three questions came in today. This one is from one of my favorite Twitter followers, at Patriots Daily. And this might require a longer answer, but I think we can probably give it truncate a little bit. The question is, do you think there's any truth to the notion that Brady can curb receiver development because he doesn't trust them?
You'd have to ask the receivers. I mean, people who have played with him before seem to like him. So didn't somebody kind of say that once?
Yeah, I think what he's referring to is players like Chad Jackson, Aaron Dobson, that sort of thing, guys who just never fit, Josh Boyce, uh-huh. That sort of thing. I mean, people are gonna flame out. I don't think that every receiver can play in this offense. I don't think Brady is going to very often just throw the ball downfield like Wilson did. Russell Wilson did to DK Metcalf in the wild card game at Philadelphia.
I don't even know how to quantify that.
Well, the next question that came in is actually pretty timely considering what we've discussed. What's Dave's relationship with other media members? What's your relationship with other media members like, seeing that your columns are always mocking them in their takes?
Ben Volen hates me. Bedard, we've already gone over that. There's some people that
What's the general feeling in the building, caller?
There's people I don't care for. I don't talk to everyone. And there are people who probably have legitimately good reasons not to care for me. But There are also a handful of people I get along with. I think everybody I've been sitting with during games, you know, this season, there was a time I was sitting with Aaron Schatz, who I really enjoy talking with, and he always has interesting ideas about what the team should do and knows the odds really well. And we get in some pretty good conversations. And then I moved down, they moved me down closer. I got a better seat, and I was sitting with the people from CLNS, like people who have been on the show, like Mike Petraglia and Evan Lazar and Alex Barth. And they're all great. I have a great time talking with all those people. So, you know, it's just like anything else. It's a mixed bag. And
sounds like any other workplace.
It's not. No.
Yeah, I've been referring to them.
The
goddamn soap operas down there, Dave. It's like they're the desperate fishwives of Foxborough. It's ridiculous.
There is a weird, everyone's competing for attention, okay? Whether they want to be or not. For some people, that's a natural inclination to compete for attention. And in Foxborough, or on any beat, really, it's like, you know, people see that as their, maybe subconsciously they see it, but it is their lifeline to a career, is making sure that your stories are seen and that you are recognized as somebody who's a worthwhile contributor to this conversation that's going on. And so, yeah, at that point, it makes it somewhat different of a workplace. And so for various different reasons, some good, some bad, not everybody likes me. Like Jeff Howe, who came on this program, was like, I talked to Dave, but he always has his headphones on. And I thought that was really interesting because that was me making myself unavailable unwittingly. Just, you know, I like having my headphones and I like listening to music. Although unwittingly to some degree, because there have been times when there's a good amount of noise in the air and it's just easier to just walk around and focus on the job that has to be done. So, you know, anyway, so thanks for that question, questioner.
Last question comes from John L. Is Mike a honk or a bobo? I'll let you answer that one.
I'm trying to remember. Danny O'Neill came on this show, and Danny hosts a radio show in Seattle, for those of you who didn't listen to that one. And he gave a very specific definition for honk and bobo, which I did not see coming. And I can't remember exactly how I defined the two. I would say that you are a footy pajama wearing fanboy. How about that?
Fair enough. That's it for the question and answer portion of the program. Do you have any reviews that you'd like to read?
There was one quick one from a user named AMB3629. I think that might be Ned Snark on Twitter. But
one of the greats.
Unfortunately, like, the headlines on these reviews get cut off in the Apple podcasts and there's no way to expand it. So it starts off with this great headline. It says, such brilliances deserve, but then .. I don't know. Maybe it's a nasty headline. I don't know. But then
get it together, men of jobs.
It says 71 ratings is a travesty. And we're now up to 72 ratings, still holding firm at a 5.0 from our 72 raters on the Apple Podcast app. And that's where we stand with that. But yeah, so please do us a favor, rate and review, even if you don't like us. Remember, if you don't like us, go give us that negative review because that helps people find us. And that would be contrary to your actions and we would win. Or should we say that that's contrary to your opinion of us, you'd be helping us and we win that way. And so I want you to do that. I want you to go give us your negative review and make us winners. Thank you. Mike, anything else going on?
Well, the season's over. It did not end the way that I wanted it to. Football's fun. I'm going to have a hard time watching the rest of the playoffs. I'll have to admit that. I'm a bit of a child that way, but I'm surrounded by Seahawk fans. They just reveling in my agony on Monday. It was wasn't a lot of fun, but I've had a lot of fun doing this. This is probably going to be my favorite episode to date. I hope that you'll find it.
This will easily be my least favorite. I'm just going to worry. Like, I'm going to sit here and worry that I'm going to get negative feedback and that, you know, I'm going to worry that I'm making the paper look bad. I'm going to worry that I'm making myself look bad. I'm going to worry that, you know, that these things get contorted And then it comes back to where I'm the bad guy.
Because nothing that we said was gratuitous. Nothing that we said rules, was...
So all these worries will happen. I know what you're saying, but all these worries will happen. And that's unfortunate. I have to suck it up. I just got to deal with it. So what are we on to?
We're on to the fallout from this episode.
I think we're on to the division round. Even though the Patriots aren't going there, I think we'll check in with listeners and we'll keep doing the show. So, you know.
Yeah, we'll take a different turn in the offseason. We're still evolving. We're still kind of finding. I think we settled into a pretty good groove as the season went on. But we'll find our voice in the offseason. We'll continue to sling it how we see it.
All right, sounds good. I'm just gonna end it right now. All right, take care, everybody. Bye for now.
Take care.